Hello and welcome to Movie Time Machine, your retro film and pop culture podcast, where we take movies from the past and relive them in the present. I'm your host, Jamie. That's right, it's just me today. I want to apologize in advance for the radio silence on the feed. We have all had very busy falls, but rest assured, we will have plenty of movie content coming your way soon. So thank you so much for your patience and bearing with us. Now, this episode today is going to be short and sweet. It's just me, and we'll see how long I can talk to myself before I go a little crazy. So what I'm going to do today is recap my holiday horror viewing and share what I'm looking forward to watching and end with a list of movies I was too afraid to watch this year. So let's kick it off with holiday horror. And I am like most of you who loves horror films. October is kind of our month, you know, get hyped up in September and I think, is it too early to start my list? Yeah, I'm maybe more of a man of tradition, like to wait to that official day in October to make the switch over to scary movie viewing, at least for the purposes of creating my list. But I will say that this year I should have heeded my instinct to start early. I ran out of time to watch everything I wanted to, and unfortunately I was only able to watch somewhere between 5 and 6 films. So I'm going to spare you the time spent in going through everything I watched this month, but I would like to highlight the horror movies I saw. So this year, I really took time and devoted it to a favorite franchise of mine, and being a kid of the 90s, born in 1989, that, of course, is the Scream trilogy. Directed by Wes Craven, starring Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, David Arquette, you know it. If you're a horror fan, you know it. Yeah, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. So I dove right into Scream, and I dove into Saw, believe it or not. Saw X came out in theaters this month. I had lofty aspirations to watch all of the films, go see Saw X in theaters. That did not happen because I have 3 children, precious little time, and I only made it through the first 2 movies, which I had seen before, but were fun to revisit, so I will jump into those as well. So I think you can think of these as like micro reviews. I would love to blow it. We might have even done a Scream episode. Maybe that was just James and myself. I know Casey's not a big horror fan. Or maybe it was James, Chad, and myself. Either way, I'll look back and see if we did that. But that's always one that's, you know, ripe for podcast picking because everybody loves Scream. What's not to love? So I will start with Scream. And as I said, revisited a franchise that I saw in high school, I think it was. I saw the first film, and I remember it was pretty present in the zeitgeist. You had the posters up at every Blockbuster, you know, the iconic row of castmates. I think Drew Barrymore, Skeet Ulrich, Courtney Cox, Neve Campbell, and Arquette are on the poster. I might be forgetting one other person. But it was big. And, you know, you had Scary Movie come out who parodied Ghostface. And it was very, very within the culture. But I was still too young when it initially came out in 96, I believe it was. Yeah, I would have only been 6 or 7 years old. So there's no way I was seeing that. So I didn't get to it until I was in high school. But that turned out to be the perfect time because I really credit Scream with kicking off my love of horror fandom in a big way. It was, you know, The Shining was ever present in my house as a kid. My dad loved that movie. We watched that often. So it was really The Shining, Scream, and a handful of others I'm forgetting, but the iconic ones, right? Poltergeist, Psycho. My grandma was a huge fan of Psycho and loved Alfred Hitchcock. So, and Vincent Price, he was her favorite. So horror was around my house. But I didn't really develop my own horror personality until high school, and that's when I dove into Scream. And I always have apprehension revisiting it because, you know, it's the question, is it going to hit the way it hit when I was a kid? And I am more than pleased to report that it absolutely does. I mean, of course, you know who the killers are going in. Of course, killers, spoiler alert. Oh, and spoiler alert, these movies are very old, but I will be going full spoilers if that's something that concerns you. So, yeah, consider this your warning. Proceed with caution. But, yeah, even though you know what you're going to get, there's still no taking away the fun that is this movie. And even the opening scene with Drew Barrymore, you know how it's going to go. You know that she doesn't survive the movie. Again, can't understate how big of a twist that was when this movie first came out. She was probably the biggest name in this movie. I think Friends may have been on the air, but didn't quite hit in the way that it would soon. It wasn't the show that it would become. And so, I mean, you had Courtney Cox, but she was not Drew Barrymore. So seeing her taken out in the first 10 minutes of the film was a shock. And every time I watch it, some part of me thinks she's still going to make it. But of course, she does not. And yeah, I think the big thing I want to say here is I just wanted to acknowledge how timeless it all feels. Every performance in this is great. You love the characters. You love the actors. And it's weird that, you know, the 90s felt so close. They never felt that far away. But, you know, it's 2023. And I just continually acknowledge that, oh, yeah, they're, you know, further in the past than, you know, maybe our minds might remember. They play tricks on us that way. So, first Scream, 5 out of 5 starts. Must see a movie, must own. I mean, you know, I'm sure you've seen it by now, but if you haven't, watch it again. Or if you have, watch it one more time. You won't be disappointed. Now, Scream 2 is a movie I remember loving the first time I saw it. However, it was one that maybe I only saw once or twice. I remember the big story beats, but not really the movie as a whole. And man, was I surprised how much fun I had with this. And, you know, maybe it's the apprehension of the next sequel following a movie that's so iconic. I mean, think Nightmare on Elm Street 2. I think that one's a lot more interesting than maybe the credit it gets. Let's see. Friday the 13th Part 2. I don't remember a thing about that movie. Halloween Part 2 is iconic as well. So I think it's more in line with that Halloween Part 2 feel. Yeah, we get a bunch of familiar faces. Of course, Sydney, Gale, Dewey, and Randy are all back, ready for another brush with death at the hands of Ghostface. And what makes this movie so fun to watch in the year 2023 is how many cameos are in this film. And they're only cameos now. I would say back then, it was just a murderer's row of actors who were just about to become famous. So you have Omar Epps, who is pretty established. I mean, he'd done Juice with Tupac, Higher Learning, some ER episodes. So his name was out there. But you got Jada Pinkett, Timothy Oliphant, Laurie Metcalf, Portia de Rossi, Sarah Michelle Gellar. This movie comes out, Scream 2, the same year as the first season of Buffy. So her star is just about to go freaking universal here. And Jerry O'Connell. I mean, there's just so many people in this movie. And that alone is reason enough to watch it. But I think beyond that, the kills are still really strong. Most notable, obviously, being Randy. That one caught me by surprise when I saw it the first time. Thought he was going to make it. Rest in peace, Randy. But again, another bold move to take out a beloved character like that to really drive home the point that nobody is safe. And yeah, it just plays on the meta themes. We're actually in film class this time, talking about sequels, talking about trilogies, and all of the winks to the horror fans who love this franchise. And I will say this movie is also memorable because of two scenes that stand out as some of my favorite in the franchise. You know, Scream, I would still say, is my favorite film. But I think the scene where Sydney and her friend are in the backseat of the car after Ghostface crashes it into that construction barrier is one of the most tense in the entire franchise. That's one of my favorites, where they have to physically crawl over him to get out of the car and hope that he doesn't wake up. And watching it this time, I thought, man, was he really unconscious or was he letting him go just for fun? I think he may have been letting him go. But either way, still an incredible scene. And the other one I really holds a soft spot for me is Gale and Dewey in the sound studio. I think it's just so well shot that, excuse me, they both enter the scene at different times and you don't realize that Dewey can't hear Gale until, of course, it's too late. Ghostface is behind him. And fortunately, Dewey survives this encounter. But in the moment, I just remember that scene being so cool and the tension being really high. So, yeah, Scream 2, I love this one. I gave this one 4 out of 5 stars. you can watch this right after you watch Scream. It's classic and maybe doesn't get the shine that it should. Now, for Scream 3, I'll be honest, I don't remember much of this movie. I think I've seen it once. I completely forgot that Wes Craven directed this and that this is, in fact, a true Scream trilogy until, of course, Scream 4 comes a decade later. But I call this one Scream into the Metaverse because we are fully there. You know, after he does New Nightmare to honor the Elm Street trilogy in the real world, he kind of does the same thing here with the Scream franchise. You know, we're in Woodsboro as a set in Hollywood with the LAPD. We're talking franchises. We're talking the director of the movie, killing the characters and rewriting the script. So there's some fun meta stuff here. Special nod to, you know, the killer will spare whoever can smell the gas. That's one of my favorite kill scenes in the franchise. But beyond that, this isn't, I don't know, this movie's strange. It's a lot of, you know, we kind of get the meta joke. So I think it might be a little bit played out this time. And the voice changer is a really odd choice. You know, Ghostface has this device that can clone anyone's voice, which in theory makes him really way more lethal. But again, it just leads to more questions than answers. Like, it's only until the final scene that Gale says to Dewey, well, use your caller ID or, you know, Star 69, who called you? Because, you know, he gets a call from Sydney and of course it's not Sydney. So why wasn't anyone thinking about that when you're dealing with a killer who we know manipulates his voice? How is that not the first thing that anyone does? So that right away stood out to me, not to mention that, you know, I just, this technology is baffling. I don't even think AI can do this yet. You know, because he would have to, he's creating speech. He's not taking recordings of people. He's cloning their voice. It just, the more you think about it, the less sense it makes. So I have a real problem with the voice changer in general in this movie. But setting that aside, I really loved the scenes with Maureen Prescott. Wes Craven does a bit more of his almost like Nightmare on Elm Street stuff here with the flashbacks and the dream sequences and she's under the sheet. And I found those scenes to be kind of like an 80s throwback and really unsettling. You know, I think even scarier than the Ghostface scenes in any of these films. So I thought those were really, really strong horror sequences. And then special shout out to Parker Posey. I mean, she's just phenomenal playing Gail Weathers. Her character is too much fun. You're rooting for her, but you're not. But you also don't want her to die, but you're also not rooting for her. And yeah, just everything she's bringing is working for me. And then last but not least, it's, I don't know, there's no clear cohesive way to talk about like Harvey Weinstein and the fact that a really key plot point here is that Maureen Prescott was basically an actress who, you know, was forced onto the air quotes casting couch by the producers. And the final scene is Sydney being locked in a director's house. I mean, it's really kind of disturbing the more you think about it. So I try not to. But that's, you know, that's even breaking through the metaverse into some really nasty real life crimes. And, you know, I just you hope that people involved with the film didn't understand the full extent of the crimes there. But yeah, I don't like to think too much about that, and definitely detracts from the film overall. So I would say Scream 3 will offer you some kind of puzzling choices. There is still some fun to be had here, though. I mean, with Sydney, Dewey, and Gale, and some new characters. You know, you get Dr. McDreamy playing cop. And I really do like the ending. Is it cheesy? Of course. But do we get to see our final girls survive their franchises? Not always. So I really love that about this film. Okay, let's see. I'm trying to keep it moving here. So that was Scream. I still have I've not seen Scream 6, and I have to revisit Scream 4. It's been a long time since I've seen that movie. Couldn't tell you about it. But Scream 5, I really enjoyed. But that will be a different show for a different year. So, Saw, and I'll keep the convo on Saw super brief. So, like I said, I was trying to watch them all before Saw X. That did not happen, but I got a chance to rewatch the first film. And what I will say is I was the perfect age when this came out. I was a teenager, high school, and I got to see the twist, right? You know, when it came out, nobody knew about it. The internet was still pretty young, so it was unlikely to spoil unless your friend saw it and was kind of an asshole and, you know, spoiled it in real time. So I was fortunate enough to see it. And at that time, not knowing what happens, you know, you're rooting for the characters to escape. Who is Jigsaw? What is he up to? And then, oh my goodness, he's been in the room the whole time. That, to me, was a 5 out of 5 horror movie. It's iconic, one of the biggest twists in the genre. And now, watching it again, once that Trump card has been played, it's really hard to kind of recapture that, holy shit, you know, stunned momentum. And it doesn't. I'll be honest, it doesn't. That's a trick you can only play once. It's like a, I think of this Looney Tunes cartoon where Daffy Duck, he's on stage and he's trying to entertain these people. And, you know, he's getting progressively zanier and zanier. And he ends up swallowing dynamite and blowing himself up. And there's some joke about, you know, it's the greatest trick on earth, but I can only do it once. Something to that effect. That's kind of like watching Saw. You know, otherwise it's really upsetting, man. This is an upsetting film. I forgot how dark it is. Just I think the hardest scenes for me is, you know, a father now is when Benjamin Linus has Dr. Gordon's wife and daughter held hostage. Those are really upsetting because that's some real life horror there. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's still an intriguing film, good performances, but, you know, can't really quite touch the full effect of seeing it for the first time. So Saw is probably a 3 out of 5 stars for me. Now, Saw 2 is really interesting to me because I think that there is, much like episode 2, Attack of the Clones, there's potential for a really good movie in there. Whether or not we actually get that movie, you know, remains to be seen. But in this one, we get the story of Detective Matthews, played by Donnie Wahlberg, who's kind of a hardscrabble cop who maybe makes his arrests and earns his convictions in not the cleanest or most legal of ways. And so the film is really about him. And Jigsaw has collected a bunch of people that Detective Matthews has put behind bars, usually through illicit means, criminals they may be, and put them into a funhouse of horrors with Detective Matthews's son. And all Detective Matthews has to do is sit and have a conversation with Jigsaw, and he will see his son again. So I think the premise here is really strong. And however, where I think the film suffers is, for me, you know, it's hard to, you always hear, review the movie that's in front of you, not the one you want it to be. But with this one, I wanted a little bit more in the house. I wanted more of the people exploring it. I feel like we don't get enough character development from the convicts. I just feel like they leave a lot of meat on the bone. And when you find out where the story goes, with Amanda, who survived Jigsaw's attack in the first film and is back in the house for this round, you kind of understand why they played a different way. But I don't know. We get a lot of screen time from Xavier, the scary, scary convict, who's just kind of going lone wolf on his fellow housemates. And I will say that served, because that served as a horror conceit, because he is scary. I mean, this guy is just, he's huge. He only cares about himself and he's ruthless. He's gonna get what he wants when and how he wants it. So I will acknowledge that that's scary, but I just wish we had more time with some of the other characters to kind of figure out why they were there and how they felt about the situation. So I will say I really enjoy Saw 2. There's some really chilling scenes, particularly the hypodermic needles. You know, if you know, that scene's gross. Ultimately, not enough time with our people in the house, and I would give this 2.5 out of 5. Nah, 3. It's fun. It's fun. Just didn't reach its full potential. It's better than Scream 3. And that is where I ran out of time this year. So, 5 movies that were horror in a month. I watch more, but we'll try and do better next year. So, I will start with a list of movies that I was too afraid to watch by myself. Now, I will preface this by saying that I've always been a horror fan, but the older I've gotten, and it's not even that, you know, I think it's been having kids. This has kind of made my horror viewing a bit. I've lost my fangs, right? You know, I don't seek out the scariest stuff anymore because I want to only have good things in my mind and happy energy to bring to my kids. And there's scary movies that I really want to see, but something about me just, you know, holds me back and is too afraid. So So Exorcist Believer. I think Exorcist is one of the scariest movies ever made. I have to work up my nerve every time I see that movie. It's a brilliant film, but damn, does that movie get under my skin and scare the shit out of me. So when I saw the trailer for Exorcist Believer, it freaked me out, man. I thought the trailer was effective and was excited to see Ellen Burstyn. And I will say one complaint I had with this movie is I'm a football fan and watch a lot of my football on YouTube TV. And I noticed that last week of October, they were promoting this film. They had a nasty habit of running Exorcist Believer trailers during primetime. Now, I've never been a fan of the when you silence someone, when you you know what I'm trying to say. I've never been the write a letter guy, like, hey, how dare you screen that trailer? That's I find upsetting and offensive. But I will say, man, when I was just trying to watch my football and my kids are in the room and bam, we get an Exorcist Believer trailer with some really scary imagery, I was pissed. Because it was not even, I feel like there's this understanding, or at least there was, that, like, you know, anything after 9:30 is fair game, right? Kids are in bed. If they're up late, well, then too bad for you. You should have put them to bed, right? I'm okay with an Exorcist trailer after 9 p.m. But this was 7 o'clock, man. We're just getting ready for bed, and boom, now we got to reckon with the devil. So that really pissed me off. You know, I had to constantly watch my football with the remote in my hand, just ready to change the channel at any break so that, you know, I didn't have to scare the crap out of my 5 and 3 year old. So yeah, thanks for that, David Gordon Green. I really did not appreciate that. And, you'll be, hearing from me shortly. Okay. So that was one, but I do think I will see that movie. You know, I got to conquer that fear. I heard it wasn't maybe all that it was cracked up to be. So I'd like to see for myself. But the next one, oh man, this movie looks good. The trailer freaked me out. I think it's called When Evil Lurks, and it's from the same filmmaker who did Terrified, I believe. Yeah, his name is Damien Rugna. What a name, man. What a name for horror filmmaker, Damien. But yeah, this movie looks absolutely terrifying. So the IMDb premise is, in a remote village, two brothers find a demon-infected man just about to give birth to evil itself. They decide to get rid of the man, but merely succeed in spreading the chaos. And man, I cannot describe the sense of fear, impending doom that this trailer elicits, but this movie looks awesome. And if I get the right scare buddy, I absolutely will watch this. This looks absolutely horrifying. So those are two that I didn't see yet, but are on my list. All right. Last but not least, we have what I'm looking forward to watching. So not a whole lot on the TV front right now. I'm just kind of making my way through the football and the hockey season, and that's just fine for me. New season of Shoresy dropped. Going to watch that. Love that show. But for movies, I've been reading David Grant's Killers of the Flower Moon, which, of course, Martin Scorsese has made into a feature film starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, and Jesse Plemons. And gosh, what is the name of the woman who plays Molly Burkhart? She, even from the trailers, is incredibly compelling. I want to get her name. It's almost got it. Bear with me. Lily Gladstone. That's right. So, the trailer looked amazing. I read the book and I was absolutely blown away. If anyone has not seen the movie, start with the book. This is American history. And man, I was just talking about evil with these films. Killers of the Flower Moon is dealing with some truly, truly evil material about these people who integrated themselves and to the Osage community in Oklahoma with the full intent of killing them and taking their money. So it's truly awful, horrifying stuff. But man, I'm hoping that the film is more about the experience and perseverance of the Osage, because this is heavy stuff, man. Horror movies are one thing, but when it's real life material like this, man, brace yourself. So Killers of the Flower Moon, looking forward to seeing that film. And I think that is all that I have for what I'm looking forward to seeing. So it's just me. I want to take a second to, at the very end, I don't know if he's listening, but I did want to acknowledge a fellow podcaster, Jason Piles. He is the host of Jay of the Dead's new horror movies with his Horror Avengers. And for anyone of our listeners who is a fan of horror movies, horror podcasting, they are pros over there. They gave us a nice shout out on their show. Thank you, Jay. You absolutely did not have to do that, but just know that it was deeply appreciated. And we're very grateful to you for that. And yeah, anyone who's a fan of horror movies, go check them out. They're doing incredible stuff over there. Just wanted to return the favor and plug a show and say thank you for doing the same for our show, Movie Time Machine. So I think that's it. It's weird to sit here and talk to yourself. I miss my friends, Casey, Chad, James. Miss you guys. Looking forward to talking with you. Yeah, I think we were maybe going to do an episode on The Lost Boys coming up here. I just watched that for the first time this week. I can't believe I slept on that throughout my teenage years. What an amazing movie. So hopefully we'll get to talk about that one as a group. Until then, and until whatever we put out next, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in to Movie Time Machine, where we take movies from the past, relive them in the present, and look for us on the internet in the social verse. And thanks for sitting and listening to me talk. It was a pleasure sharing my day with you. So thank you, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.